Hello, USMNT fans, and welcome to the One Goal Soccer Podcast. We're here to talk about everything USMNT related as we follow and support our national team in their route back to the World Cup in 2022 and beyond. My name is Matthew Singer, and I'm joined by my friend and co-host, George Abena. George, how are you doing today, buddy?
I'm doing great, Matt.
We are new to this, and just for those who don't know us, George, why don't you tell everybody about kind of your soccer journey and how you became such a fan of the U.S. national team?
Yeah, like you said, my name's George Abena. I'm currently a rising senior on the men's soccer team at Boston University. I'm from Connecticut, and growing up played with Oakwood Academy in the U.S. Soccer Academy. So, you know, throughout my soccer journey, I've been in the U.S. soccer system, playing in the DA, playing against, you know, all these top guys who are killing it in the professional ranks right now. So that's kind of my personal connection to everything. And I've always been a statistician, is that the word for it? You know, looking up the guys I've played against, you know, on the same teams, different teams, pro guys. So just excited to talk about U.S. soccer and everything within it.
And for me, I don't quite have the illustrious soccer career, but I am also a rising senior at Boston University. My soccer journey, I guess, is kind of high school. I started playing soccer and I really fell in love with the sport. And I'm really, really passionate about dual nationals and just kind of understanding how that whole environment works, how U.S. soccer works in relation to global soccer and kind of how to foster youth and all of those good stuff. So I just love all things U.S. soccer and I'm just really excited to get this started. Without further ado, some things we'll be talking about today is the MLS is back tournament, maybe some transfer stuff and kind of our expectations for players next year. George, what are your general thoughts on the MLS is back tournament?
Yeah, I think when MLS is back started, there was a lot of question marks. We saw cases left and right. Obviously, FC Dallas had, you know, not so great couple weeks there, ended up being stuck in their hotel room for 2 weeks, had to drop out. We saw Nashville have to drop out. So it started the tournament with a lot of controversy, but I think that's died down a little bit. Last couple rounds of testing, there have been zero cases. And now we're starting to focus on the soccer aspect, which is what, at the end of the day, we want. We want it to be a safe environment. And I think, you know, it's just been a good tournament because it's obviously a little different, but at the end of the day, it's, you know, there's games happening. You see people proving themselves. And so far, it looks like every team wants to win, even though sometimes the quality might not be the best.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's been a really interesting tournament. One thing I thought was really interesting is like this 5-sub rule and how it's really helped get a few players debuts. So, like we saw Kevin Prades, he made a sub appearance for DC United. And there's been a lot of players who I feel like wouldn't have gotten these opportunities if it wasn't for the 5-sub rule and even just the back-to-back games and just playing so close-knit. So I guess I'm just curious, like, what are your thoughts on the 5-sub rule in general? Do you think it's a good thing? Do you think it's something we should continue to have? Or is it kind of disrupt the play?
I think for now, it's a great thing to have. Going forward, in terms of long term, like a year from now, I don't necessarily have an opinion. But as a player myself, 5 subs means more of an opportunity if you're on the bench to come into the game. And I think especially now, like you said, you know, players' fitness levels aren't the highest. There's a lot of games going on. It's hot down there in Orlando. And we've seen the European leagues, they're keeping up with the 5 subs for at least the near future. So I do like the 5 subs rule. You see a lot of guys getting opportunities that maybe wouldn't with the 5 subs. So definitely for now, for the rest of the tournament and probably the near future, I think it's a good thing to have.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's been pretty good overall. I think it's cool. It gives people more opportunities. The only thing I really worry about is like the disruption of play and like kind of too much turnover of players, if you know what I mean. But I think it's somewhat pretty good if they do it in like 3 sections, like because it just seems like it's normal subs, but you can just get more players on and off the field, which I think is nice. But overall, I guess it's not too bad. But also in terms of the MLS is back tournament, are there any players that have stood out to you? I mean, I know everyone said Ayo Akinola, Darlington Nagbe, James Sands maybe. There's a lot of good U.S. soccer talent out there, and it's kind of cool to see it all right in one area. But who are the names that stood out to you?
Yeah, so a couple guys. Like you said, one, I'd love to talk about James Sands. You mentioned his name. And I find James Sands interesting because I first played against him when I was 12 years old, and he's the same player now as he was back then, just on a bigger stage. Doesn't necessarily jump off the page to you. You're not going to leave the game saying that is the best soccer player I've ever played against in my life. But at the same time, you're not going to remember any mistakes you really made. And as a 20-year-old kid playing against grown men, that's not a bad thing at all. And we've seen him play in a back three for NYCFC. They struggled in their first 2 games, won the third. But I thought throughout all 3, he was probably their most consistent player on the field. But I think the question of James Sands, which will determine what his future is with the U23s, which with the national team, is what is his true position? He's been playing in a back three. He played center back for the U17s, but I think his best position is probably as a holding midfielder number six, you know, maybe sort of in that Will Trapp mold where he's connecting passes, breaking up play when necessary. But I've really been really impressed with James Sands. And another one, you know, kind of, you know, off the cuff that I don't think a lot of people are talking about are Henry Kessler from New England Revolution. He's a guy who was a super draft pick, you know, influential super draft picks, you know, are declining. But Bruce Arena, when he was drafted, said this is the guy who'd have drafted number one. And most people probably took that tongue in cheek. But Henry Kessler didn't start the first game, came off the bench, gave some stability. Didn't start the second game, came off the bench, gave some stability. Starts the third game, they keep a clean sheet. And I think, you know, that's a guy that maybe after these three games, Bruce Arena looks and thinks that might be my best center back. Andrew Farrell still coming back from injury, getting stronger. Della Maia had that mistake. And Michael Mancian also coming back from injury. So Henry Kessler might be the best center back on New England Revolution right now. And I think, you know, that's a guy who's only going to play with more confidence as time goes on.
Yeah, I guess that's a pretty underrated shout. I guess, too, for me, obviously, Ayo Akinola, he was a big prospect for the U.S. in his youth ranks, played for the U-17 team, and then almost played for the U-20 team before missing out due to injury. And that kind of suffered that injury all throughout last season. And he's really stepped up in a big way with Josie Altidore missing time with fitness, injury, and whatever it is, you know. But, you know, he's been really interesting to me because you look at a guy who was so good during his youth cycles, and you're like, okay, when is it going to come? And people thought, well, maybe it's one of those things where he was just bigger and stronger and everyone else caught up to him. But he's shown now that, you know, I can do my own thing. I'm a pretty solid player. Obviously, he scored 2 goals in the first game, a hat trick in the second. And I thought it was really interesting in the game against the Revolution where he didn't score any goals. But I think what the Revolution did is they keyed on him, you know, and in the other games, it was kind of like, we don't know this player, so we can kind of see what's going to happen. And now that there's at least some of a sample size against him, teams are scheming against him. And it really is imperative that he improves his off-ball awareness and kind of positionality to understand, like, okay, I have to drop in these times to aid in possession, or if the ball is up the wing, how do I set myself up to get in a position to where I can either get my head or a foot on it and they can see me, you know what I mean? So I think the next step for him is kind of growing his playing style and understanding how to put himself in the best position to succeed and like how to do that in relation to his team. But I think he's been a real breakout performer, of course. And I think another like pretty topical person, but also very interesting, Brendan Aaronson, who everyone loves to talk about these days. He's been linked with different Bundesliga clubs. I think he's really interesting, and he's shown a really strong technical ability to be 19 years old and to play this role with the Philadelphia Union is definitely a big step for him. Obviously, there are some holes in his game, but I think he's just really stood out as like a playmaker. And I also think Jackson Yule, you know, he's not the sexiest name when you talk about youth prospects, but he's just quietly calm, picks out passes as a six for the San Jose Earthquakes, and he's just an important part of what they're doing. I just think he's kind of an underrated prospect in a sense, but just an underrated player because he just does things well and quietly does them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I think all those guys, you know, I think the theme that all three of those have is they've all been underrated throughout their youth careers. Brendan Aaronson came into the picture late in terms of youth national teams, didn't quite make the U-20 World Cup. Jackson Yule didn't make his U-20 World Cup for the 97s and slowly started playing for the San Jose Earthquakes. Wasn't really until last season with Mateus Almeida where he got a shot. So I think, you know, like we said, the MLS is back tournament. It's a chance for these guys to establish themselves. You know, Ayo Akinola benched Tim Weah for the large part of his U-17 cycle and then obviously doesn't get on the pitch, you know, because of Josie Altidore. And for 2-3 years, people kind of forget about him. But I think, you know, this tournament is letting people shine. It's letting people get a consistent amount of games under the belt, get on the field, you know, and show the U.S. soccer fan base what they can do.
No, just another person to add to that list who's kind of a hot topic in U.S. soccer circles is Darlington Nagbe. I saw some stat where it was like 157 out of 160 passes he's hit so far. And I was like, well, that's pretty impressive. But I think he's really interesting because obviously in the past, he's made his point clear that he's not so interested in the national team picture. But I also saw a story recently saying Greg Berhalter would open the door to a return if he wanted it. So I'm just kind of curious, like, what are your thoughts on Darlington Nagbe as a national team player, do you think he's someone we should be actively trying to get back? Or is it one of those things where his commitment level you're a little worried about? Like, what are you saying on that?
I think with Darnton Nagbe, it's very simple. If we are picking our 23 best players for the U.S. national team by position, when it comes to midfielders, Darnton Nagbe is part of that group. And, you know, just on the field, he's just so composed, so calm. Like you said, 157 out of 160 passes. Yes, he might not be necessarily playing splitting balls through 50 lines into the forward or through balls here and there, but he is a he's the tempo of the team. He sets the pace. And, you know, that's something that Tyler Adams isn't necessarily. That's something Weston McKennie isn't necessarily. If you want to put Reyna in the midfield, Reyna isn't going to do that. Reyna is going to be the guy who gets the ball and tries to do, you know, make things happen. But Nagbe is the tempo. He's the one that sets that. And I think any team could use that. We saw it in Portland. We saw it in Atlanta. We're seeing it now in Columbus. So I think if you can get Nagbe on the national team picture, that's an incredible thing. Whether it's from the start, off the bench, he would be a key player for this national team. And people want to talk about his commitment. I think if he's a part of the group, he will play to win. He will want to be there. The thing about Nagbe is he's always been very direct for what he wants. You look back to when he got drafted, he was supposed to be the number one overall pick, but said, I do not want to play in Canada. I do not want to go to Vancouver. So he went number two to Portland. And then you saw with Atlanta where he wanted to go there. At Atlanta, he was successful, but then said, I want to go home to Columbus. So yes, Nagbe likes a demand where he plays and when he plays, but I don't think that isn't necessarily a knock on his commitment level, because we've seen time and time again, when he's on the field, he's committed, he's a part of the team, and he's a game changer.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree about that. I mean, obviously, he's a very, very talented player. And it's hard to argue that he's not one of the best 23 players who could be wearing an American crest. But, I mean, one thing I really worry about is I remember during the Trinidad and Tobago debacle, which he was on the field for, I remember him saying afterwards, like, you know, the national team thing, it's not all sunshines and rainbows. It's kind of like, it's a little dirty going down to those CONCACAF places where these aren't necessarily soccer nations and the facilities aren't super pretty. And it seems like he's really interested in the nitty gritty, which I guess I respect, and that's fine. You know, he's a pretty quality player, and I think he'd be one of those players you'd want to have on the field against Mexico, against the Canada, against the Costa Rica in those big matches. But I worry about his willingness to commit to those games where it's against a team that isn't super, super clean and clinical. And it's like, Darlington, do you want to come in? Like, I don't think that's fair to the rest of the guys to say we can bring this guy in, you know, when we need him. And he's not 100% committed. But, you know, as long as he shows that commitment and he sticks to it, I would love to have him part of the team. But I just worry it's one of the situations kind of like Timmy Chandler, where he can be an important part of the team, but he kind of floats in and out when he feels it's convenient for him. And I hope that isn't this case with Darlington Nagbe. But based on what he said in the past, I'm just a little bit worried about it, if you know what I mean.
Like you said, in the past, he said, you know, I'm not ready to focus on the national team right now. But you can bet if Darlington Nagbe says, I want to be called up, it means he truly does want to be called up. It means he will put everything he has for the U.S. national team. Because you have to remember, this is a guy who had to fight to be on the national team. He had to get his citizenship, and then he was able to play. So he's already put in the work to be on the national team once. And if he does it a second time, it means that he truly wants to be there.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point, I guess. You know, one thing also I think is really interesting about the MLS's back tournament is obviously we've been seeing Brandon Aaronson, Paxton Pomykal, Gianluca Busio, a lot of these young guys, because of the coronavirus ramifications, have been deemed as like possible value targets for a lot of clubs in Europe. So what are some of the guys, or I guess who are some of the guys who have kind of caught your eye and you think, oh, maybe they can move, and kind of what are your perspective on possible moves?
Yeah, I think you talk about Aaronson. The thing, you know, some people talk about how he needs to improve his game. They say he doesn't get on the ball enough. He's not clinical enough. But I think the thing with Aaronson is that he has all the tools, and that's very evident to see. I was watching the Philadelphia Union game. 5 minutes in, I could tell this guy knows how to play the game of soccer. And the thing with coaches watching is you can mold Brendan Aaronson. You know, they're licking their lips looking at that. You know, if you see a player like that, you say, give him a couple months, I'll work on his finishing. I'll work on his final ball. I'll make sure he gets 50 touches in training sessions. And in a year, who knows where he's going to be. So I think coaches watching that, that's what they want to see. They don't want to see a finished product. If they see a player at 19, 20 years old in the MLS and they think he's dominating here, I don't necessarily you know, where he goes from that. That's not what they want to see. They want to see a player that they can mold into what they want. I'm sure when Bayern Munich saw Alphonso Davies, they saw some flaws in his game. Alphonso Davies was a raw prospect in MLS. He had some great moments, but he wasn't perfect. But Bayern still paid $17 million from him, moved him to left back, and the rest is history. So these European coaches don't want to see necessarily finished products. They want to see players who they can mold into what fits their team.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I guess when I think of tantalizing prospects, I think the first name I think about is Paxton Pomykal. But I guess one of the other things I've been seeing is like Gianluca Busio has gotten a lot of traction, whether it's with Fiorentina, Juventus, I think AC Milan even. It's kind of weird to me, though, because I saw him this morning in his game. He started for Sporting Kansas City, and he just kind of floats in and out of games. And it's kind of weird to me because Sporting Kansas City, they turned down a $4 million offer. I believe that was earlier this summer or in the winter. And they said, no, we value him at $10 million. But they really haven't given him the opportunity. And it's one of those things where even in the opportunities, he hasn't really shown out. And I think it's one of those weird kind of dichotomies where the MLS team says, this is a guy who's a valuable part of our future, but at the same time, we're not willing to give him the time to emerge as part of that future, but he's still a tantalizing prospect. And obviously he signed at a very young age. Like there's clearly talent there. And maybe it's a situation like Brendan Aaronson, where there's a lot there and teams can mold him a certain way. And maybe Peter Vermes is trying to do that. But I haven't really seen enough from him to where I'm confident that he can be molded into a team. Like, I don't think that he could, obviously he's not going to walk into any side of in any Serie A side tomorrow, but I don't know. Does he walk into Fiorentina for a year and then it happens? Like, I don't know, man. It's just kind of weird.
I think with Busio, first and foremost, like you said, he was the youngest signing since Freddie Adu when he signed back in 2017. He's been on youth national teams where he's been a key player from the early onset, even before he went to Sporting Kansas City Academy. So I think the knock on Busio is positionally, what is he? Is he an 8? Is he a 10? Is he a winger? So obviously we can't answer that question because he doesn't get enough minutes, but it's one of those things where the talent is obviously there. And if there's a European team willing to spend the money, they have an idea in mind. They know where they're going to put him on the field. But at the same time, if he gets bought by a bigger team, I don't necessarily think they're going to value him as, you know, a first team player. I think they'll say, we'll put him in our second team for a year. We'll put him, you know, with some guys his age to see where he stacks up. And that's why Sporting Kansas City valuing $10 million, no team's going to pay $10 million for a guy who's going to play on their second team and not get a handful of first team appearances. But I think in terms of a talent, in terms of pure ability, Gianluca Busio is still 18 years old. We have to remember that. And, you know, it's unfortunate that he's not getting the minutes of Sporting Kansas City, but we see around the league there are coaches willing to play teenager. So obviously for now it'll be interesting to see what happens to him, but I definitely think he's still a talent and someone to keep an eye on for the future.
Yeah, no, I guess I agree. I just think it's a little weird, but I guess it's one of those things where it's kind of representative of like MLS as a whole, because I remember with the whole Aaron Long transfer saga, oh, we want $10 million or $12 million, whatever it was. They came in at 8 and they couldn't figure out a deal. I just worry, you know, with these MLS teams who they have guys who are obviously capable of playing in Europe sometime. We see Reggie Cannon, he structures his contract so that way it benefits FC Dallas and him if he goes to Europe. So I think maybe that's kind of the next wave for MLS at least. And I hope the MLS is back tournament. It gives a really good opportunity for more eyes on the players. You know, it's like everyone is centralized in one location. You turn on the TV every day, there's one game, no matter where you are, no matter what time you can watch an MLS game. So I think it's just a really cool opportunity, at least for the players and for us fans to say, well, there's more exposure, and hopefully more exposure leads to more exposure in Europe, but not just exposure. You know, I want to see these offers and I want to see kind of an understanding from these MLS teams that, you know, these players and their growth is not just the benefit of MLS and American soccer, but both. You know, I think you can do those both at the same time. And I don't think it hurts either to acknowledge that as the truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But you want your best players to play in the best leagues. Obviously, there's some players, the Reynas of the world, the Pulisics of the world, the Weston McKinneys of the world, who went before they had a chance to play first team games in the MLS. But at the same time, you have the Tyler Adams, you have the Alphonso Davies, the DeAndre Yedlins, who honed their skills here and then went on. So both pathways work. So we need to, you know, let these guys who are in the league right now, you know, and tell them, you made the right decision to stay and play in the MLS first. There is a pathway for you to get to Europe to play in a first division. And I think, you know, you kind of have to put your money where your mouth is. And obviously you want to get the value you deserve for your players. But at the end of the day, the aspiration for a lot of these guys is to play in a top European league.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think just like the key is just be honest, you know, and I think that goes both ways. The player can be honest about their intent, and at the same time, the management should respect that. And of course, you have to get fair value, but there should be some level of push and pull from both sides. Speaking of transfers, you know, this is going to be a busy year for a lot of Americans. We've seen Anthony Robinson. He's been linked to a move possibly, and he had that failed move to AC Milan due to his heart irregularity. And then we've also heard Weston McKennie possibly leaving Schalke, and now even John Brooks maybe on his way out of Wolfsburg. So are there any transfers you're looking at this summer, or even for Weston McKennie? Like, where do you think the best spot for him is?
I think Weston McKennie, it's an interesting one because obviously Alexander Nubel's going out of the club, so they need a captain. And Weston McKennie is one of the guys, you know, being sort of touted for that role. And at 21, 22 years old, as an American, that's incredible to even be in the conversation as a captain for a European team. But the unfortunate thing is that though Schalke traditionally is a top German club, they are on a decline. So the question for Weston McKennie is, does he want to be a leader and try and bring his team out of that decline? But there is, you know, a good chance he could just fall right down with them. So I think if he does get the move, it looks like he's, you know, pretty set on England. I think a mid-table side is his best bet. You know, obviously there's rumors of Liverpool. I don't know how honest those are. But, you know, getting a handful of games when a midfielder gets injured isn't the right step for him at this time. I think if he goes to maybe like Everton, a club, you know, that does have Europa League aspirations, that if they put a season together, can play in Europe. If he gets to Everton, I'm sure with the preseason, he could end up being a starter. And, you know, knowing Weston McKennie, that versatility of the six, the eight, maybe even as a center back, if it really comes down to that circumstance, teams are going to love that. And especially at a mid-table side, he will get games just based on that.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, I think Liverpool is kind of a tough fit for him. But I actually think it's a little bit of an interesting fit because, you know, Henderson's getting up in age. Milner's on his way out. I'm a huge Liverpool fan, by the way. So I think there's a role for him if he really, really wanted it and said, this is where I'm going to plant my flag and I'm going to push through this. But like you said, there's a really big inherent risk because if that doesn't work out, he's spending a lot of games on the bench and that's not what we want. But I guess if I could pick an ideal spot for him, I would probably say I think Wolves is really interesting. You know, you talk about having European aspirations. I think they're a little bit farther ahead in their development as a club than, say, an Everton. But I guess he would have to play with Raul Jimenez, who's a Mexican international. But I feel like that's fine. You know, it's not the biggest thing in the world. But, you know, you look at that team and the kind of the way they play, and I feel like that would be a really good opportunity for him to grow his game because, obviously, the Bundesliga is a very technical game, and so is the Premier League. But I feel like the Premier League, the demands, they're not just physical, but also technical and schematic in a sense. You know what I mean? There's every week in and week out, you're really playing top teams. And the Bundesliga, very, very good teams. But there is some drop-off, not to poo-poo on Josh Sargent's Werder Bremen. But, you know, there's no team quite like that in the Premier League. So I think it's just a little bit of a step up for him. And I really encourage him to make the move. I think it would be cool. But, you know, if he were to stay captain at Schalke and he were the one to rise them from the ashes, that would also be a really cool thing. Another person I'm interested in is Anthony Robinson, who has been linked to West Brom and West Ham. I think David Moyes was at one of his games watching him. And, you know, he's been in and out of the U.S. setup in the past. I'm kind of curious, I guess, your general thoughts on him and where do you see him going?
Yeah, I think Anthony Robinson's a really interesting one because we saw him in a couple of the Dave Sarachin days. Those were very interesting times. Matt Olisunde got a cap. Luca De La Torre got a cap. Everyone was getting a cap.
Not us, though.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't call me up. But, you know, we saw him play well in some games. During the France game, he looked the part against the world champions. But then we saw that fall with against Colombia. You know, James Rodriguez, a great player, gave him a tough time. But I think he's gotten better defensively. He's gone better positionally. In the clips I've seen of him at Wigan, he's connecting well. So I think he's shown he is much better than, you know, a bottom of the table championship side. I think, you know, if you look at a lower table Premier League, higher table promotion aspiration championship team, that is where he should be. You know, West Brom right now might be in the Premier League next season, might be in the Champions League next season. If they're in the championship,
they're going to be pushing for the title for promotion. If they're in the Premier League, they're going to be, you know, one of the lower teams. So I think that range is where Anthony Robinson belongs.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think one thing that was really an issue against Colombia was when he's kind of a defensive liability, but in watching the games this year against Wigan, I feel like he's gotten much better at, obviously he's great going forward and he's a very good attacking left back, but one thing he's really strong at is like his positionality and understanding how to use his body in relation to obviously a defender or an offender coming at him, and just understanding, okay, obviously I'm very talented at going forward, but my responsibility primarily is to defend and to make sure that I can do both. And I think his next evolution as a player is, can he do it for 90 minutes? And obviously he can do that in the championship, but like you said, like, okay, let's pick the step up. You know, is it going to be West Ham? Is it going to be West Brom? Is it going to be another team on the lower end? Or could it be in Italy? I don't know where it would be. But I think for him, even in the national team picture, like having him and Serginho Dest on opposite flanks would be a very, very attacking-minded defensive fullback pairing. But I just worry a little bit because I'm like, this guy's very talented going forward. I just need to make sure that he's not a liability, because like in Colombia, like I said, it was good. He's great going forward, but he got burned so bad, you know, and it's just making sure that he can keep his evolution. And I think playing in the Premier League against, again, physical players will teach him that the defending is very, very important. And he's shown that at the championship level. You know, it's kind of like he's done that. He's proven it. Okay, let's see if you can do it at the next level. And I think if you can do it at a low table Premier League team, okay, then you could probably do it at the international level. So I think it's a really good start for him.
I mean, you talk about, you know, the step up and defending. You look at DeAndre Yedlin. DeAndre Yedlin, you know, was great going forward at MLS, but wasn't necessarily an amazing defender. Still got that move to Tottenham, got loans to Sunderland, Newcastle, has been a pretty solid Premier League player for a couple of years now, and he's on the fly gone better defensively. So I think, you know, that's something that Robinson has to do. You know, they're not going to say, all right, we're not going to play you for a couple months. You can get defensive better defensively. They're going to say, we're going to play you now and you will get defensively as the weeks go on.
Yeah, no, I guess that's true. And I think exposure therapy in a way is good. But I hope that Greg Berhalter realizes that he's an important member of the national team, because I think we've seen that Daniel Lovitz kind of displaced him for a little bit and everyone was kind of shaking their heads. Like, how is Daniel Lovitz replacing a guy who's doing very well in the championship? But if it was really just defense, this is really the opportunity for him to say, okay, like, I can do this. And I think he's proven right now that he's worthy of a national team call-up. And if he can continue to do that at a Premier League level, there's really no argument there. So I don't know if you have any other thoughts on him, but I mean, it seems pretty clear that he should be part of our future.
Yeah, I think in terms of left-footed left-backs, I honestly think he might be the top one for us right now. We've seen Dest play at left-back as a righty. You know, I was watching Manchester United, saw Brandon Williams playing left-back as a righty. It doesn't always work out. And yeah, we've seen Tim Ream play as a very, very, very defensive-minded left back. We've seen Nick Lima play left back as a righty. So it kind of, you know, gives you the question, who is our best left-footed left back, not a center back, not a right back? And I think that answer is Anthony Robinson. And, you know, we saw Chase Gaspar and Sam Vines get call-ups in January as left backs. And those are two guys who are doing, you know, solid in MLS, but you know, I think if you look in Europe, that guy is Anthony Robinson. So I'm excited for him to come back into the national team picture and kind of make that spot his own.
No, I agree. I think it'll be really interesting. You talk about the national team picture. One thing I do worry about is I don't really know when that will come together. Obviously, we saw that Mexico announced, I think, an October friendly with the Netherlands. And so I'm kind of curious how we kind of build this squad, because obviously we have a fair amount of domestic talent and we have a fair amount of talent abroad. So I think it's really interesting to kind of figure out how are we going to get everyone involved and where are we going to get them involved, you know, in a safe way for everybody. And I guess one thing that I thought was pretty encouraging that I read this morning was Greg Berhalter and Brian McBride, the general manager. They both mentioned how they've been reaching out to various European players like Owen Otuosi, and just reaching out and saying like, okay, like, how are we doing? Like, how are we going to, you know, cultivate what we're doing here and making sure that we're keeping everyone on the same page. And I think it's just cool to see that, you know, obviously we haven't really seen that in the past. Maybe it's been happening behind closed doors, but it seems like there's a real genuine effort from U.S. soccer to at least keep some level of continuity and community, because obviously Zach Steffen has mentioned in the past during that weird little Dave Sarakan era, it was kind of a lull for U.S. soccer and we didn't really have much of an identity. But now it's kind of cool to see we have all these youth players and now we're kind of trying to put it somewhere. You know what I mean? So I think it's cool. one thing that I've thought about is, you know, Brian Keo, Evan Rotundo, and Kobe Hernandez-Foster in the last week, they all announced that they'd be going to Germany with Hernandez-Foster and Keo going to Wolfsburg and Evan Rotundo going to Schalke. Are there any guys that you're looking at who are kind of either in the youth ranks or maybe didn't have a great season? You're hoping that they could have a strong summer and maybe breakthrough?
I think, you know, not in the youth ranks of the full team, but Josh Sargent deserves to be talked about. I think, you know, people expect a lot from Josh Sargent, and he did it on himself. He was phenomenal in the youth ranks, scoring for the U17s, getting called up to play 3 years up with the U20s, scoring for them. So he put himself in this position where everyone's kind of expecting him to, you know, just be scoring double digits in goals every season. But if you really look at the team he's on, Werder Bremen, you look at the field and you don't really see what system they're playing. You just kind of see players running all over the place. And that isn't necessarily the best environment for, you know, a 20-year-old striker. And, you know, some people said they wish they got relegated so he could go to the 2 Bundesliga and find his footing. But I think at the end of the day, he's 20 years old and he's, you know, mostly a starter for a team in a first division. And that is pretty impressive. There's not many 20-year-olds getting to lead the line, you know, every week, every other week for a top division team. So I think people, you know, are expecting a lot from Josh Sargent. And I think it will come. He's 20 years old. He could have a bad next 3-4 seasons and then start scoring. And he'll still have 6-7 years in his prime. So I'm excited for, you know, what's to come of Josh Sargent. I really don't think Werder Bremen could be any worse. So that's a good thing. So I'll be excited to see what happens for him. You know, there's the links of maybe going to Salzburg with Jesse Marsh. Maybe that's a good move for him. You know, having an American coach kind of lead him. I trust Jesse Marsh with our players, possibly a future national team coach. We'll probably talk about that in another podcast. Sure. But yeah, so I think, you know, it's a big year coming ahead for Josh Sargent. But at the same time, if it's not a big year, we go again. Because after next year, he'll only be 21. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Josh Sargent, but Josh, if you're listening to this, just do your thing and I have faith in you.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, I think of the Josh Sargent situation, it kind of reminds me of like an NFL first round draft pick, right? They have that first, they get signed to a 4-year contract. And for Sargent, you know, last season he was just getting integrated to the team. This was his real first full season. So that's kind of like year 2 in the NFL. Okay, you know what you're doing. And by year 3, okay, we expect you to show who the player you are. You've been acclimated. You've shown a little bit in years 1 and 2. And I think this is his third year. It's time for that, you know, step forward. And like you said, if it isn't this next year, we go again. He's only 21. And I guess that kind of reminds me of another player I'm interested in terms of their development, whether it be at FC Bayern or abroad. We don't really know. Chris Richards, when he was talking to Taylor Twellman this morning, he asked him point blank, so are you going to be at Bayern next year? And he said, well, we'll just have to wait and see. And that kind of reminds me a lot about a lot of the young players. For even Josh Sargent, like you said, if he doesn't go next year, he'll be 21 years old. You know, not any of our players who are real serious core members are above 25 years old. And so I feel like it's one of those things where we expect so many of these players. Like when Tyler Adams moved to Leipzig, we're like, oh, great, dude. American N'Golo Kante, he's in. But it hasn't quite happened yet. You know, he's close. He's breaking in. He's playing a lot of meaningful minutes. But again, he's only 20 years old. Like, how can we say that, oh, we're set, you know? And everyone's like, oh, he's Timo Weah. He's injury prone. But he's 20 years old as well. He tore up the U20 World Cup. Like, there are so many talented players. But it's one of those things where it's just like patience. You know what I mean?
Any country, any player is going to get excited if a player, you know, shows promise. But if you look around the world, at 20 years old, Virgil van Dijk was still playing in the Netherlands. At 22, he was playing for Celtic. He didn't move to Southampton until he was 24 years old. He didn't move to Liverpool until he was 27 years old. Meanwhile, we have guys, you know, in top leagues playing meaningful football in the top 5 leagues. That's something we should be proud of. So that's why, you know, you see guys like Gio Reyna. They talk to them. They're like, 2026. Obviously, 2022 might come a little too soon. Like you said, our top guys, Reyna, Pulisic, Adams, McKinney, possibly Chris Richards if he breaks through. These guys are all 22 and under. So 2026, when they're in their primes, they're 27, they're 26 years old, they're 25. You know, who knows who's going to break through then? It might be them. It might be Keo Hernandez-Foster, these guys who are moving to Germany. It might be 206 right now in some random academy in the middle of nowhere that we don't know about. And I think that's what we have to be excited, because if these guys,
these Adams, these Pulisics, if these are the blueprint for our national team, I think, you know, the sky's the limit.
Yeah, no, definitely. I agree. Like, you talk about just like the pipeline, you know, it's very interesting. You see Conrad De La Fuente, is he going to make it? We don't know, but he's one of two Americans at Barcelona. Like, we could not have said that before. Yes, there was Ben Lederman. He didn't work out. That's part of the game. You know what I mean? But it's about getting those chances. And I feel like when it comes to Josh Sargent, just putting himself in positions of success, like the same can be said about American soccer as a whole. It's like, let's put ourselves in positions to where we can grow. More players are moving at young ages. More players are just trying it. Players are going to fail. That's inevitable. That's part of the game. But I don't look at it and say, oh, we're resting our hopes on one guy, and that's Freddie Adu. And then if he doesn't make it, oh, we're all terrible. You know what I mean? And it seems like we're just like stockpiling talent. And you talk about Uli Lenis, who everyone's like, oh, dude, he didn't get his chance with Wolfsburg this season. Dude, he's 19 years old. He got a chance with the U.S. team. He scored a goal in his debut. He showed he's a talented player. You know, there's at least some value there. Is it going to be next year? I hope so. But if it isn't, no sweat. He'll be 21 years old. He'll break in. He'll make it happen eventually. I'm not too worried about him. I'm not too worried about really any of the guys, because as long as they're putting themselves out there to give themselves a chance, I feel like worst case scenario, we're out there. You know what I mean? And it's about like volume. And I feel like at this, like, we have quality. You know, we really do have some quality players, but the way you increase quality is with quantity at the end of the day. You know what I mean? Like, we could send a couple players, but the more we send, the more chances we get. And whether that's even in the MLS, they're going to be good players in the MLS, but let's just keep growing and cultivating talent. And that's kind of where I stand at it.
Another big thing is there's so many different pathways. You have guys plugging away in MLS. You have guys who are going to top five league youth academies. You have guys like Ledesma and Alex Mendez who go to the Netherlands, where they're hoping they'll get a chance at first team action sooner than later. So I think all these different pathways, you know, they're all gonna, you know, I think work in the end. You look at USL, you know, Jose Gallegos.
Yeah.
Is he gonna go to Europe? Is he gonna find an MLS home? I think more than ever, we are finding different pathways. Before, in the past, it was play college soccer, go to MLS, or maybe try and go to Europe when you're 17 years old and try and make it work. But now there's just so many different options. I think that can only help US soccer in a whole. And I think as a young player, that helps because you see guys in the pathway. You see what Pulisic did, but then you see also what Tyler Adams did.
Yeah.
You see what Chris Richards did. You know, you see all these different pathways, and more than ever now you're saying, I'm going to find what path is best for me. And I think when you have a, you know, a single one size fits all situation, that doesn't work. It hasn't worked for us in the past.
And that's true. I mean, obviously people are like quick to dump on Jordan Morris. Oh, he didn't move to Werder Bremen. Oh, he's in MLS. So he's not worth it. But dude, you watch him these last couple of games, he's been a monster. And whether he's playing in the MLS or not, it's hard to argue he's at least not part of the national team picture. I would argue he might be a starter, but that's for another podcast. But, you know, it's just like when I think of these pipelines, I'm like, the pathways, there are more than ever. But I think they're just stronger than ever because more and more players are just trying these different pathways. And you've seen, okay, Jordan Morris, he's been very strong in MLS. He didn't go. Good for him. That's fine. You know, I would like him to go, but that's okay. That's on him. Just increasing these odds. And I just really enjoy that overall. But I just think it's very, very interesting. And again, for all of our U.S. soccer fans, I preach patience. You know, even for me, even for you, we love to get excited about these guys. I'm like, this guy's GRN is going to be amazing. Of course he is. I hope he is too. But remember, he's 16 years old. And again, none of our best players are over 25. So let's take a deep breath, decompress, maybe wrap this podcast up here. Maybe next week we'll touch on some more MLS is back content, maybe some more transfer rumors, and maybe even my Football Manager Odyssey. For those who don't know, well, I guess no one really knows. I've been working as the U.S. soccer manager and football manager, and it's like the year 2023. And so we went through the World Cup, and I guess I can kind of share my odyssey and kind of my core players and kind of how different players have evolved. Not for the sake of hyping anybody up, but just for the sake of understanding, of course. But of course, for all your soccer needs, visit at OneGoalUS on Instagram and Twitter. And don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter. And you can follow me on Twitter at MattNotSinger. And George, what is your Twitter at?
At GTABUNAW14.
Check us out. We're having a great time here. Thanks everyone for listening. You guys have a good rest of your week.